Heather Vale, and you're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Glenn Simpson, Senior Director of Specialty Care at Community Ambulance. Every holiday season, Community Ambulance deals with the struggles of emergency response, but you can prepare for increased traffic and potential roadside emergency situations that come with these heavy traffic conditions. Glenn, thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, thanks for having us. We appreciate it.
So we see your vehicles all over the road, but what exactly is Community Ambulance?
Yeah, so Community Ambulance is a locally owned ambulance company here that proudly serves Southern Nevada. We're responsible for roughly about three quarters of the 911 calls that are produced every single day and every single year in Clark County. And then we back up response in the city of Henderson. So a very busy organization, a little over 700 providers that are out there responding to these 911 calls every single day, as well as supporting all the big, large events of all sizes that come to Las Vegas and make us the entertainment capital of the world.
Yeah. Okay. How does demand for your services change during the holiday season?
Yeah, you know, as many of our listeners likely know, it seems like every weekend, the size of our city just grows. And then with the holidays, as we kind of, you know, get out of the summer and things cool off, we start to see more people come to our city. And whether that's people visiting the Strip, whether that's people coming to town for, you know, National Finals Rodeo or any other large event, we tend to see more people come to our city and more people tends to equate to more calls for service. And so for us, it's just a, you know, it's a reminder that we're there, we're available, and we're excited to see people come to our city.
Yeah. And on top of that, of course, during the holidays, people are celebrating. What sorts of DUI incidents do you see during the holiday season?
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, you know, we're certainly no stranger to people getting on the road that are intoxicated. And it doesn't change necessarily in the wintertime. It doesn't change during the holidays. As a matter of fact, unfortunately, we see more DUI-related incidences. And as you can imagine, you know, it affects so many people when you choose to get behind the wheel and think, you know, for example, that you're not intoxicated, but in fact, you are. And not only does it affect the other people that are involved, it even affects our first responders. You know, at the end of the day, every day we go out to serve our community, to take care of those that need us at their moment of need. And it's certainly, you know, every call that we run, including, you know, a DUI-related incident that may result in death, makes an impact on our providers. And so whether that's us, whether it's other first responders in the community, the rippling effect, the family of the loved one that loses their life, it's something that, you know, we cannot stress enough. There are so many options out there for you, whether that's rideshare, whether that's picking up the phone, calling a friend, whatever that is, the resources are available. There's many organizations that take part in offering free rides. There's many organizations that offer, you know, the ability to leave your car where it's at and ensure that it's safe so that you can pick it up when you're sober. And so we just, you know, it's something we're very passionate about. It's something that we can't stress enough. Please, please, please do not get behind the wheel if you are under the influence.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely good advice. Now, how big of a risk are car fires when we're traveling long distances?
Yeah, you know, with holidays come people that tend to hit the road as opposed to, you know, flying. And, you know, each year we see more people that tend to go that way. Not too long ago this year, we played witness to, you know, a major artery in and out of Las Vegas, the I-15, getting shut down for an extended period of time because of a lithium battery truck that caught fire. And so we saw the effects of that. We saw what that can do to that main artery. And for us, it's about being prepared. It's being prepared for those situations. It's being prepared for being, you know, stuck on the road for, you know, we saw it a very long time with nowhere to go and almost in a situation where you're stranded and where you're stuck out there. And so that car fire can easily take place, you know, in your vehicle. And so, again, it's a reminder that, you know, if you are planning for travel on the road, get your car in, get your car service, you know, make sure your car is road ready, road worthy, so that you can safely make it to your destination.
How can we limit the risk of car fires, whether it's from overheating or faulty wiring? I mean, of course, taking it in to have it looked at is a great idea, but what are some things that we can do ourselves?
Yeah, you know, it's you know, that's probably the best piece of advice is making sure that the car is ready to hit the road. But in the event that, you know, whether it is faulty wires, you know, whatever it is that may cause that fire, it's really important that you protect yourself first and foremost. If you can safely pull to the side of the road and then get out of the vehicle, get out, you know, don't worry about those possessions such as, you know, your luggage, maybe gifts, whatever that is, your life and any of the lives of the vehicle in that car are far more important than any other object that may be in that vehicle. And often we see that. We see people wanting to gather up all their property and, you know, whatever that may be. And the reality is your life is not replaceable. The other items in your car tend to be replaceable, but not your life or the other lives of the individuals that may be in that car.
Yeah. Okay. Now, besides the things we've talked about, the DUI, the risk of car fires, there's also the chance, of course, that depending how far we're going, we could run into snowy road conditions. So all of that in mind, what kind of roadside emergency kits should we keep in our cars to be prepared?
Yeah, you know, a lot of us may not travel long distances on a regular basis, and so we may not carry some of the items. But, you know, for us, it's very important that when you do hit the road and, you know, if you end up getting stranded or you end up getting stuck or to your point, you know, there's a mountain pass that's closed because of weather, it's really important that you have some supplies in your vehicle. And we talk about, you know, first and foremost, having a first aid kit, whether that's for you personally, whether, you know, you may be in a position to be able to help somebody. And when we talk first aid kit, you know, a standard first aid kit that you can pick up from, you know, your local pharmacy, a local store, just to have that available in the event, you know, that some of those supplies are needed. In addition, if your car becomes a hazard, carrying reflective triangles so that, you know, if you are pulled to the side of the road, you're able to place those. And so oncoming traffic, it makes you more visible, which in turn is much safer. Having flashlights, right? When we're traveling long distance on highways, we all know that those highways, you know, they tend to be dark and they're not lit whatsoever or very poorly lit. Making sure that you have a fire extinguisher. You know, the reality is we need to stay prepared. We never know when we might break down. We never know when we may be in an accident or be stopped in traffic because of an accident that's ahead that may take, you know, several hours to clear. And so, you know, little tips like making sure you pack enough non-perishable snacks, making sure that you have, depending on, you know, where you may be driving to, what the climate is like, making sure you have extra blankets so that, you know, you're not going to want to run your car for an extended period of time if you're just stuck in traffic, but you're going to want to be able to make sure that, you know, you keep everybody in the car warm, for example. So those are just a few of the items that we definitely recommend to have available for yourself and for others that you may come across.
Yeah, some fantastic tips there. Okay, so where can our listeners go for more information about how to stay safe for the holiday season?
Yeah, you can definitely check out our website, communityambulance.com. You can also check us out on pretty much every social media channel. You can find us by searching for Community Ambulance. We tend to spend a lot of time really just kind of putting out small little public service announcements, taking opportunities to educate the public. And sometimes it's not even just about education. Sometimes it's just a reminder. And that's what we're here to do. And we definitely encourage everyone to have a safe, joyous holiday, wherever you may be doing, whoever you may be spending the time with, or maybe you just stay here in our backyard. But we wish everyone a safe and happy holiday.
Awesome. Okay. So once again, that website is communityambulance.com, communityambulance.com. You can also find Community Ambulance on all the social media platforms. They share information, tips like we've talked about today, how to stay safe, how to make sure that you and your family are safe, especially during the holiday season, but all year round, of course, communityambulance.com. And we've been speaking today with Glenn Simpson. He's the Senior Director of Specialty Care at Community Ambulance. And Glenn, you know, some really important topics that you've brought up today and some really fantastic tips that I know anyone listening can get a lot out of, as well as the tips and information that you offer online. So thank you so much for sharing today.
Thanks for having us. We appreciate it.
This is your captain. We are going to be experiencing some slight turbulence. Please fasten your... Oh, hold on. Just got a video of my cat.
Imagine the pilot of an airplane was as confident as you are texting and driving. Seems kind of crazy when you put it like that.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Hello, everybody. I'm Chris Walker, the guy pictured on crosswalk signs everywhere, pleading with all drivers to slow down, not be distracted or drunk, and watch and stop for pedestrians, especially in school zones. And yikes, bikes, watch for bikes too. And walkers, to be safe, cross at all marked crosswalks, or you can legally cross at unmarked implied intersection crosswalks as well. Got it? I am your walk star. Check me out online at chriswalker.org.
I'm Heather Vail, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Bobby Hunter, President of Medicare at United Healthcare. Medicare annual enrollment is currently underway, but ending soon. So now's the time to weigh the pros and cons of various options. Bobby, thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Heather.
So when does Medicare annual enrollment end?
It ends on December 7th. And just important to note, choosing the right Medicare plan can be one of the most important decisions a person makes, not only for their health, but importantly also for their wallet. And like you said, we're in the middle of the annual enrollment period. It started on October 15th. Again, it ends on December 7th. And it gives people the chance to confirm their coverage and make changes for next year, which can be really important if there have been changes to your current plan, your health status, or your budget. And those things can lead to some unintended consequences if you don't take action during this critical period.
Okay. Now, why do some people find it complicated or confusing to choose the right Medicare plan?
Yeah, well, I'll start by acknowledging that choosing a Medicare plan can feel complicated or sometimes overwhelming, but it doesn't need to be. So what I would say is first take inventory of how your health needs have changed, and then review what changes may be occurring with your current coverage to make sure that those needs and coverage still align. And then second, determine if your current plan is still the best fit for your budget. And that means paying attention to more than just the monthly premium. Also, make sure to review those other potential out-of-pocket costs like deductibles and copays, because those things can add up as well. And that's why a majority of Medicare consumers now actually choose Medicare Advantage because of the choice, affordability, and predictability that it offers. And that could be low and $0 premiums, $0 preventive care, and all-in-one coverage for things like prescription drugs, as well as many other valued extra benefits.
Okay, now just to clarify, what's a Medicare Advantage plan compared to traditional Medicare?
Yeah, great question. So traditional Medicare provides some basic, what's called Part A and Part B, so inpatient, doctor visits, outpatient coverage. However, the consumer is still left with typically a 20% cost sharing for whatever those charges may be. And what Medicare Advantage does is it brings together that coverage plus prescription drug coverage, plus things like dental, vision, hearing, and other important extra benefits. And not only wraps it all into one comprehensive plan, but then reduces the costs that the member is responsible to pay, including things like those copays I mentioned, where you can see your PCP often for $0 copays. And we also reduce the cost of those inpatient stays or other healthcare experiences you may have if and when those things do occur.
Okay, so Part A and B are part of traditional Medicare plans, which are available through the government. Medicare Advantage, which is available through private healthcare providers, adds prescription and other coverage. Now, we've been talking about prescription coverage being Part D. So what is Part C?
Yeah, that's right. So Part D is the prescription coverage. Part C really is the Medicare Advantage bringing together of all of these different elements. So when you have Part A, which you said, traditional Medicare, right, the inpatient coverage, Part B, which provides the doctor and kind of outpatient coverage, Part D is the prescription drug coverage. Part C then brings all of that together into one comprehensive plan. So you buy one plan from your private insurance company like United Healthcare. It brings all of that together. It reduces the cost that the member is responsible to pay, and it adds in things like dental, vision, hearing, and other important extra benefits.
Okay. Now, even if someone already has a Medicare Advantage plan and they don't make any changes, there are some changes to the Medicare program happening in 2025. So what should they be aware of if they're not already?
Yeah, well, some important things just always to look at beyond the cost, to your point, is confirming that your preferred doctors and hospitals are available through whatever plan you're considering. A good example of that would be in 2025, UnitedHealthcare will again offer Medicare Advantage's largest national provider network, which means anywhere you are in the country, members pay in-network costs when seeing any of our more than 1 million providers. And then second, maybe I would mention the, again, you talked about Part D, and this is one thing that is changing a bit for 2025. So important to first make sure that your medications are covered. And even if you don't expect to change plans, review the formulary to see that your regularly used prescriptions are still on there and covered next year. And then if you've heard about the Inflation Reduction Act or IRA, that's also bringing some important changes to this coverage for consumers. And it's going to ultimately simplify this Part D benefit and provide a lower out-of-pocket maximum for those Part D drugs during the year. So really important that people familiarize themselves with these changes as they move through this critical period of open enrollment.
Okay. Now, you did mention making sure that the plan you had before still fits your healthcare needs, still fits your budget. What are some key things that might pop out? Because again, even though we're trying to simplify it here, it still comes across a little complicated. So what are those key milestones during the process that people should be looking for?
Yeah, well, I would say, in addition, again, to just confirming, your providers are still in network, your drugs are covered, review those extra benefits that you're going to have access to make sure they still meet the needs of what you anticipate using in 2025. Maybe the other thing I would mention is that we do know that with the Medicare population, the needs, wants, and priorities of these consumers vary greatly. And that's why with UnitedHealthcare, we're offering many new plans in markets, which feature some new designs and new benefits that are designed for specific consumer populations. So it's important that people take a look at those because they're designed for folks of all budgets, health stages, and ages. And the whole point is to provide coverage that you can count on for your whole life ahead. So take the time to look at some of those things that might be new in the marketplace, because there may be something in there that just fits your specific needs a little better than what you have today.
Okay, awesome. So where could listeners go for more information about some of the new Medicare plan options that are available now?
Yeah, a lot of great resources available. For maybe educational information, you can visit gettoknowmedicare.com. And for more on UnitedHealthcare plans, you can visit uhcmedicarehealthplans.com.
Once again, those websites, if you want to know more about Medicare and the various options, you can go to gettoknowmedicare.com, gettoknowmedicare.com. And if you'd like to explore some of the new options that are available from UnitedHealthcare, uhcmedicarehealthplans.com, uhcmedicarehealthplans.com. And we've been speaking today with Bobby Hunter. He's the president of Medicare at UnitedHealthcare. And Bobby, it's been some great information that you've provided today that will hopefully help people when they're navigating through the process of choosing their Medicare plans for the upcoming year. So I really appreciate you being here today and sharing with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Heather. Appreciate it.
Ever lose your keys? Is that normal aging, dementia, or something else? Fear often stops us from asking for a simple checkup from the neck up. Knowing your numbers, blood pressure, blood sugar, and cholesterol are common, but your cognitive numbers are also important. Request our free guide. It's filled with tips for better brain health, facts about dementia, and much more. Go to 1-800-DEMENTIA.org or call 1-800-DEMENTIA. Your brain will thank you.
Wouldn't it be great if life came with a remote control? You could hit pause when you needed to, or hit rewind, like that time you knocked down that wasp's nest.
Uh-oh.
Or that time you forgot to roll up your windows in the car wash.
Fantastic.
Yeah, a remote control would have come in handy then. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome.
But prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes like managing your weight, getting active, stopping smoking, and eating healthier, you can stop prediabetes before it leads to type 2 diabetes. It's easy to learn your risk. Take the 1-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Life doesn't come with a remote control. Yikes! So you're on your own with the WASPs. You have the power to take control of prediabetes. Visit doihaveprediabetes.org today. That's doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
You're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and joining me is Sandy Markwood, CEO of U.S. Aging. Financial scams occur year-round, but it's common to see an increase during the holidays. U.S. Aging has a new campaign to educate older adults and their families about the most common types of financial scams, how to avoid them, and what to do about them. Sandy, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me, Heather.
So what exactly is U.S. Aging?
So U.S. Aging is the national organization that represents all of the area agencies on aging in the country. And we also advocate for the tribal aging programs. The goal and mission of our organization is to ensure that older adults can live with independence, dignity, where they want to age, which is at home and in their community.
Nice. Okay. Now, why do scams increase during the holiday season?
Well, you know, shockingly, Heather, they increase because this is a time when there are more online shopping opportunities, donation opportunities, and those are just ripe for scammers to try to incorporate funding opportunities to get funding from any of us because their techniques are pretty sophisticated. But that's why U.S. Aging really launched our Home for the Holidays campaign to prevent scams, is to help ensure that older adults can spot scams, but also protect themselves against scammers.
Yeah, that's definitely important. Now, as you mentioned, we can all fall for these scams, but why are older adults in particular more vulnerable to financial fraud or scams?
Well, older adults are often targeted because they tend to have financial savings, own their own home, or have good credit, making them attractive to scammers. And also, unfortunately, Heather, older adults may feel isolated or lonely during the holiday season, which is a situation that scammers exploit.
What are some of the most common types of scams that target older adults?
Well, there are so many, but I'm just going to highlight a few of the major ones for you. And one this time of year, which is one that really focuses in on those donations. Oftentimes, someone may call or email or text pretending to be or represent a real or a fake organization and ask for donations. So this time of year, please give, but make sure you're giving to a very reputable organization. Another scam is the grandparent scam, where scammers pretend to be a grandchild or another relative in trouble, and they call and ask for money or gift cards to help them out. Another sad scam is a romance scam that is really targeted to widows and widowers, and the scammer pretends to be romantically interested in someone, developing trust and asking for a money or a loan then, once they gain that trust. And then also banking scams, where a scammer pretends to be a financial or a banking professional with urgent information about your account or fake opportunities, such as how to invest in cryptocurrency. But really what they're looking at is to get into your banking accounts and to get into your credit cards. So we need to always be on the lookout for these potential scams.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned a few key points there, which tend to always be involved in these scams, some kind of emotional level, trust, worry about what happened to the grandkids, that kind of thing, and a sense of urgency. So what are some tips to avoid fraud or scams and not fall for that?
Well, Heather, U.S. Aging's new Home for the Holidays campaign is focused on this issue, and we share 10 tips to avoid scams. And those include being wary of someone offering you a great deal and then trying to pressure you to act. You know, act quickly. Take this deal now. Don't be afraid to say no or hang up if you feel uncomfortable or suspicious about a phone call or a text or solicitation. Never send money using a gift card or a wire transfer directly to a seller or someone you don't know. And don't click on suspicious links or attachments on texts. And don't ever share bank information, credit card information, social security numbers, or passwords with anyone. Keep your personal information private.
Yeah, definitely. Now, when you're talking about the Home for the Holidays campaign, where will people see this or hear about this campaign?
Well, the Elder Care Locator is a national information referral service that connects older adults and their families with services and supports at the community level. And the whole goal is to keep older adults safe and secure at home. And the Elder Care Locator is really the impetus of the Home for the Holidays campaign. So if someone feels, an older adult or a family member feels like they've been scammed, they can contact the Elder Care Locator. And our trained staff can connect them with local or national organizations that can help them. So to contact the Elder Care Locator, just call or text 1-800-677-1116 or go online and visit eldercare, all one word, .acl.gov.
Okay, awesome. And what other resources are available for people who suspect fraud during the holidays?
Well, our new Home for the Holidays publication, Protect Your Wallet, has all of the information that I've talked about and more, and can be found on our website, which is usaging.org. Or you can call and get information also from your local state unit on aging in Nevada. Or also, especially if someone really feels that they're in imminent danger due to a suspected financial fraud or abuse, then they should go right away to the police and contact them through calling 911. And, you know, bottom line, Heather, is, you know, holiday is a season of giving. But what we want to make sure through this campaign is you're not giving to scammers.
Yeah, definitely. That's a great point. All right. So once again, those websites, if you want to find out more about US Aging and what they do, or take a look at the Home for the Holidays campaign with 10 tips to spot and avoid fraud, especially for older adults, also applicable to the families, usaging.org is the website for that. Now, if you're interested in the Elder Care Locator, you can call 1-800-677-1116 or text 1-800-677-1116, or go online to eldercare.acl.gov. That's the Administration for Community Living, eldercare.acl.gov. And there's plenty of other resources there as well, or seniors can get connected to help in their own neighborhood. And we've been speaking today with Sandy Markwood. She's the CEO of US Aging. And Sandy, it's been so fantastic having you here, highlighting these scams, letting people know what to watch out for, how to avoid them, and what resources are available to have at their fingertips during this time of year when scams just tend to go through the roof. So thank you so much for your time today.
Heather, thank you for having me.
Click this link now to review my bank transfer. I didn't make a bank transfer. Ugh, another phishing message. Are you frustrated by these too? So much of our lives are online today. To make sure my information is protected, I checked out CISA's Secure Our World resources. They've got four simple ways we can stay safe online. First, learn to recognize and report phishing. Next, create a strong, unique password for each online account, and use a password manager if you can. Then turn on multi-factor authentication for extra security, and you'll receive a code when logging in. And finally, turn on automatic software updates for convenience and safety. Click here to track my delivery. Another phishing message. But now I know how to protect myself from scammers, and you can learn too. Go to CISA at cisa.gov/secureourworld for more quick, easy tips to be safer online.
This is McGruff the Crime Dog, and I need you to help me take a bite out of crime. Counterfeit products are popping up everywhere. Fake sneakers, fake cosmetics, and even fake pills. Crooks are selling counterfeit versions of just about everything. Last year, billions of dollars worth of counterfeit products were sold in the U.S. Sure, it may seem like saving a few bucks on the things you want isn't a big deal, but counterfeits are usually made in unsafe conditions, potentially using hazardous and even lethal ingredients that could harm you and others. And the money you've paid, it goes right into the hands of criminals and may support child labor, drugs, and even gangs. Smells like big crime to me. So if you still think buying fake products is harmless, think again. And remember, if you don't know where the products came from, how could you know where the money goes? You're smart. Buy smart. Go for real. Learn more at McGruffPSA.org. This message is brought to you by the United States Patent and Trademark Office and the National Crime Prevention Council.
I'm Heather Vail, and you're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Michael D. Smith, CEO of AmeriCorps, and Dr. Mary Hyde, Director of Research and Evaluation. The nation is divided in many ways right now, but AmeriCorps' biannual Current Population Survey, Civic Engagement and Volunteering Supplement, says volunteering may be the answer. Thank you both so much for being here today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
So for those who don't know, what exactly is AmeriCorps?
Well, AmeriCorps is your federal agency for volunteering and service. We work to strengthen communities, improve lives, and foster civic engagement through the power of volunteering and service. Every year, we have about 200,000 AmeriCorps members and AmeriCorps senior volunteers that serve in 40,000 locations, including thousands in the great state of Nevada. They're tutors and mentors in schools. They're in our food banks. They're in our homeless shelters. They're cleaning our public parks and fighting fire, working on fire mitigation. So chances are, if there are people of goodwill that are doing something about a challenge in a community, AmeriCorps members are there at the heart of it.
Wow, that's awesome. So what are some of the most important issues that your civic engagement and volunteering survey revealed?
Well, as you mentioned, every 2 years we get together with the Census Bureau to study volunteering and civic life in America. We look at the formal volunteering rates, how many people are volunteering formally with nonprofit organizations. We look at informal volunteering, and we also look at other civic engagement trends. And I am excited to report that volunteering is rebounding. During the pandemic period, we saw a historic 7% point drop in the number of people that volunteered formally with nonprofits. And we were worried, would that be a blip or would that be a permanent trend? And we actually are now happy to report that the national volunteering rate has increased by 5 points. That's 75.7 million people that are volunteering. That's 28.3% of the populations. That's 4.99 billion hours in service, which is about $167 billion economic value. And informal volunteering actually continued to grow as well, with about 137.5 million people volunteering informally, about more than half of the nation's population.
So is that a gradual increase since COVID, or was it a sharp increase?
So for the informal volunteering rate, the increase actually is up about 3 percentage points. So that's the biggest uptick we've actually seen since we've been collecting this data. And in terms of the formal volunteering, that 5 percentage point increase reflects a 22% growth, which is the highest growth we've seen since administering this survey. So coming out of COVID, as Michael said, there's been a really big rebound, and some of these percentage point increases are some of the biggest we've seen in terms of rebounding.
Nice. Okay. Now, Michael mentioned a lot of different places and types of organizations where people volunteer, but who is it that tends to volunteer the most?
Sure. So our 2023 data show that women are volunteering at a higher rate than men, and that's a pretty persistent pattern. We also see differences in people with children under 18 in their household compared to those who don't have children. Parents are volunteering at a higher rate than folks without children in their household. In 2023, we actually saw people ages 16 to 17 had the highest formal volunteering rate of any age group at 34%. In terms of largest relative gains, who's volunteering? Those who have less than a high school education, we saw the relatively highest gains in 2023. And people with family incomes of less than $25,000 also showed the largest relative gains in 2023.
Wow, that's fantastic. Now, in terms of healing the nation's divide, why is volunteering so essential to our nation's economic and social well-being?
You know, we talk all the time in AmeriCorps about this triple bottom line. Volunteering makes a difference in communities and the nonprofits and the municipalities where we serve. But it also transforms the lives of people who serve. It improves physical health. It improves mental health. It decreases social isolation and increases social cohesion. And we also see these broader benefits to society. In communities where there is strong volunteering, people are more civically engaged. They are more likely to come together across differences when we know that those spaces where we come together are fewer and farther between. And so what we need to do is really shine a spotlight of how Americans don't turn inward, but they turn outward when the going gets tough at times of crisis and in between. And that's why it's important to study this data to make sure the civic health of our nation stays strong.
Okay. In the beginning, you mentioned about how AmeriCorps facilitates volunteers and has volunteers in states across the country. But how exactly does that work? What does it look like when you facilitate volunteering opportunities?
Yeah. So, you know, there are folks that can provide episodic volunteering a couple hours a week, which is wonderful, you know, reading to kids, helping to clean up a public space. But AmeriCorps members are members. They're actually serving up to 1,700 hours a year, tutors and mentors and coaches in our schools, working in our food banks, veterans that are serving other veterans, folks that are working in substance abuse and recovery programs. And so that is a wonderful way to meet a serious need that we're seeing in the social sector. But what I love about AmeriCorps is we're also a force multiplier. Every year, we, our 200,000 AmeriCorps members and senior volunteers actually help engage millions more episodic volunteers in the programs that they're doing on a day-to-day basis, but also through national programs that we run, like our Martin Luther King Jr. Day of Service, which is coming up, or our 9/11 Day of Service, or the fact that we have something called the Volunteer Generation Fund, where nonprofits can apply to AmeriCorps to get dollars to recruit and retain volunteers.
Awesome. So where could listeners go if they'd like more information? First of all, if they want to volunteer here in our community or find out more about the results of the Civic Engagement and Volunteering Survey.
Absolutely. Well, first, I went to Nevada to celebrate. You had about 479,000 formal volunteers contributing 36 million hours of service. So let's celebrate that and keep that growing. And if more people want to join that volunteer force, go to AmeriCorps.gov. We can find a way for you to serve if you're 18 to 80, anywhere in between or beyond. And if you want to learn more about this exciting new volunteering and civic life in America data, AmeriCorps.gov is the place to go as well.
Okay, perfect. So once again, that website is AmeriCorps.gov. That's spelled AmeriCorps.gov, AmeriCorps.gov. You can find out more about volunteering opportunities, and you can take a look at the Civic Engagement and Volunteering Survey data to see why so many Nevadans are volunteering, which is absolutely fantastic. And of course, we talk about that a lot on this show. So way to go, Nevada. And AmeriCorps.gov, once again, is that website. We've been speaking today with Michael D. Smith. He's the CEO of AmeriCorps, and Dr. Mary Hyde, who's the Director of Research and Evaluation for AmeriCorps. And it's been really great talking to you both about this issue and how volunteering can help our nation and how many people are stepping up and making a difference in our community. So thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you, Heather. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Are you looking for more in this world? Are you ready for something bigger? Then we are looking for you. The big-hearted, the bold, the messy and the gutsy. The teachers, the growers, the builders. The skilled, the sharers, the change makers. We need you. We are the Peace Corps. In more than 60 countries, we go all in and all out. We are volunteers, partners, communities, working together, living together, bringing our experience, passion, and joy to building a better world together. From tackling climate change in Mexico to keeping kids healthy in Kenya, from sustainable farming in the Philippines to education in Kosovo, we learn more, give more, share freely, and serve boldly. Are you ready to tackle the tough stuff? To go the distance to make a difference? Then we have a place where you belong. Join us at peacecorps.gov.
Artificial intelligence has been one of the most common phrases in our society of late. But is it a tool to make our lives better or something to be feared? I'm Matt Bigler with Odyssey News Station KCBS in San Francisco, where my colleagues and I we'll be taking you on a journey across Silicon Valley to explore this artificial revolution and consider, is the future automation? Ben Beharin is a Silicon Valley-based tech analyst. Ben, this term AI is bounced around quite a bit, but is what we're seeing out there really artificial intelligence?
Oh, sure. No, it's a great place to start. And, you know, it kind of feels like one of those philosophical discussions, right, to start. Because you're right, there's a lot of ways to look at this. I think people who have been in this field for a long time look at some of the generative AI stuff that we have today, which is really just, I would say, some form of advanced, to use a technical term, matrix multiplication, which just means that if you put in a word, it's essentially going to try to predict the next word or just string together logic of sentence structure and a whole host of other things, right? And that's just simple like math that's happening on our compute engines. Nobody would call that intelligence, right? Being able to say, write me an essay on so-and-so and so, you know, topic, and it just goes to the internet and forms something that looks readable. You know, again, it's automating a process. It's not really what we would sort of call intelligent. So I think there's a gap today as to what this idea is of where we'll go, where something might be truly intelligent, you know, maybe even able to do or come up with ideas, concepts, creative ideas that humans can't, or on the level with humans. That is not where we're at today. But I think the way I would look at least today is that it's more of an augmentation type of intelligence. So you're able to have it help you do things, help you, you know, write an email for you, right, in your tone. Again, not intelligent, that's a useful feature, but that's essentially augmenting a function of a task that a human does with a computer. And that's, we can go down this path of, well, is that the ultimate reality here, that it's more just an augmented type of intelligence designed to make humans more efficient? Or are we going down this path where something's going to be independently sentient, where you hear people talk about this idea of, you know, artificial general intelligence? So I don't know. I know a lot of people are chasing this, you know, sentient. I think that's a long, 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 long way off. But the idea that this is now just augmenting us in helpful, quasi-useful ways, right? That's the world that we're at today with this, you know, quote-unquote term, artificial intelligence.
Standing on a San Francisco street, you might not notice that some cars passing you have no drivers. Mike DeWald with Odyssey News Station KCBS rode along with one Californian who decided to give the self-driving rideshare company Waymo a try.
The prospect of hopping into a moving car with no driver for some can be scary, for others intriguing.
When I first moved here, just seeing these cars with the giant cameras spinning and no one in the driver's seat.
Logan Pratt moved to San Francisco 3 years ago.
I've definitely been wanting to try it. I just haven't really found the right time or made the effort to.
We joined Logan on his first Waymo ride in San Francisco. We called up the app, which told us there would be a 6-minute wait. On the way, running into a protest. More on that in a moment. Right on time, we found our vehicle parked and waiting.
Here we go. Wow. Handle comes out for us. That's just fantastic.
The car giving a welcoming greeting with relaxing music.
Sounds like I'm in a spa.
Surprisingly, the car also acknowledging what we encountered on the walk here.
Our team is aware of the interruption to your ride.
And with that, we were off. The most obviously notable feature, no driver.
This is so odd. There's just no one in the front seat.
The car maneuvering an average day of city traffic without issue.
It's cool how the wheel is just like making like all these micro adjustments. So far, steady ride.
A digital panel on the center console shows a detailed map of everything around.
That has a whole view of every car, even their blinkers.
We may use interior cameras to check on riders, improve our products, and more. But our microphones are only on when you're connected to rider support.
This Waymo passes the test of a 5-way intersection.
That was actually kind of a complicated intersection.
That was a very complicated intersection. I would be a little stressed myself driving across that one.
The alternative, ride-hail services with a driver, have their positives and negatives.
You know, sometimes you get a weird driver, their car smells bad. Sometimes you're like, when did this person learn how to drive? Yesterday.
Then there's the benefits of local knowledge of the neighborhoods.
In cases of emergency, like, you kind of do need a human.
Then about halfway through, it happened. A moment of seeming confusion as the car pulled up behind a large truck offloading.
Uh-oh. Now we're getting beeped at. All right, let's see if it goes now. Oh, there you go. I thought we were going to be stuck there.
It took a couple minutes, but crisis ultimately averted.
I don't think I've ever done that.
That made a choice right there, because we had to go into oncoming traffic.
Yeah, that was just right over the double yellow.
With that, we reached our destination.
Look at that. It pulls over off onto a side road.
You're here. Please make sure it's clear before exiting.
A successful, roughly 40-minute ride equating to an $18 fare.
Ride one complete. What's the assessment?
It was great. I thought I would be scared, but I wasn't.
Pratt admits, despite a smooth ride, there are some elements that are tough to get used to.
Seeing no human in the driver's seat was very weird.
Is that the sort of the hardest thing to overcome?
Yeah, it's just weird. Like, I've never been in a car without someone in the driver's seat while it's driving, so it's just like, who's driving me right now?
Still, Pratt says he's up for using the Waymo service more regularly.
Whoever coded it to drive us, I guess they're doing a good job, so props to you guys in Waymo.
Waymo's autonomous vehicles aren't alone on the streets of San Francisco. Zoox's ramping up testing of its more shuttle-like robo-taxis here and on the Las Vegas Strip. A first chance for the public to ride will come next year, but only in Sin City.
This innovation has also expanded to another business experience that we all have, shopping. Not just for efficiency, but also for the fun of it. Holly Kwan with Odyssey News Station KCBS went to check out the latest innovations seen in stores.
If you thought online shopping was easy, now comes the next step in brick and mortar commerce.
With Amazon One, you can enter, identify, and pay with just your palm, whether it's getting to the gym,
USC Professor Emeritus Gerard Medioni is an Amazon VP and distinguished scientist who helped design the palm reading technology. On a video posted by Amazon Science, he says it's about solving the problem of the time suck.
Go look for your credit card, or you need to fish for your phone, and you know, it creates friction. What we want to do here is give customers time back.
You link your credit card to a scan of your palm and you're done.
First thing is that you're in control. Each time you use Amazon One, you intentionally need to put your hand over the device to scan your palm for it to work. So you get to decide exactly when and where to be recognized.
In the last year, these palm readers have been in place in more than 500 Whole Foods stores, which enjoys a loyal customer base. But these Oakland shoppers aren't ready to hand over their hands.
I've seen it for the past year, and I haven't been able to move myself towards using it. I do use the Retina for the iPhone, right? And we do use the fingerprint for the iPhone and other things, but for some reason, I just haven't been able to entrust that with Amazon.
I tried the Amazon stores where you can kind of go in, personless shopping, and
just walk out.
It was fine, not great. If I had a question, I'm kind of, you know, stuck searching on my phone for, and I look forward to seeing people in the grocery store, not just, you know, people who are also shopping, but people who work at the grocery store and, you know, be able to kind of say hi.
If we're going to introduce these technologies, they have to work really, really well.
CBS tech analyst Ian Schur.
Amazon's thing, it's an interesting idea, but I think part of why it hasn't caught on broadly, and by that I mean outside of Amazon, is that kind of discomfort with a new technology. You know, I've been using Apple Pay and Google Pay since they came out, essentially. And still to this day, when I use my watch instead of my phone, people give me a look, but they're totally used to it with the phone.
Cashless payment, driverless cars, it's a level of autonomy we still have to get used to.
A great example I was taught many years ago was that, you know, one of the reasons that elevator companies had people standing in the elevators initially, pushing the buttons and operating the elevators was not because they needed someone to be there to push the buttons. We all know how to push buttons, but it was to make people feel more comfortable with the idea that someone was in charge of the elevator, right? And that it was safe. And I think that the way we look at these things changes over time, but we have to be proven those trusts.
Who likes being cookie here?
Coors Field, just the latest MLB park to install Pay by Palm technology. But then where's the fun in being tossed a cold one from the vendor? Back at Whole Foods.
Apple Pay on my phone is just as fast. But then now you're having Apple have access to all your credit cards and stuff. So it's like, what do you want to give up, you know? What level of freedom do you want to have computers take over for you?
I choose to come to the grocery store. We have Amazon for free this month, Whole Foods delivery for free. And I just want to, I don't know, there's something about being here, being around people.
Touching the fruit.
Touching the fruit, seeing the things that we like, smelling it. I don't know. I just don't want to go to this point in my life where everything is done via phone and via digital.
Everybody's using AI for what? To make art, to make music, to do all this stuff, to take away from people's work and stuff. It's like, that's all things that humans should do. So why is it that we're having a computer take away the elements that create the creativity of people?
At a certain point, we have to ask, what society are we building? Are we chipping away at the foundations of civil society by lessening our interaction with each other, reducing the amount of time and meaningfulness of our connections?
With art often comes science, or at least it feels that way on the job hunt, whether you are looking or if you're the one hiring. Shannon Golden with Odyssey News Station KCBS went along for the journey.
Searching for a new job can turn into a full-time gig. I've been there, and it's top of mind for Keaton Maring, a third-year law student at University of San Francisco's School of Law.
It is a lot, and it is kind of difficult to find jobs that are open or, you know, that I'm going to be qualified to get.
Third-year Brandon's been scouring for internship opportunities.
Honestly, I'm spreading myself very thin across everything, just hoping something bites.
But they both have a trick up their sleeve to try and get a leg up on the competition. ChatGPT, a generative artificial intelligence chatbot that, when given instructions, can provide a detailed response.
I mostly use it for resume and like cover letters.
Brandon uses it to prepare for interviews.
I put what I would say in and see like if it can help make it a little bit more professional instead of just me spewing about my life.
And they're not alone. According to a ResumeBuilder.com survey, almost two-thirds of job seekers these days are getting hired after using resumes and cover letters written by ChatGPT.
We are strongly encouraging students to use AI.
Alex Hockman, director at USF's Career Center, is now coaching students on how to use AI.
I always say, remind it what year you are, what school you go to, what your major is, because AI knows a lot more about USF sometimes, it seems like, than I do.
But he says because models like ChatGPT aren't customized for the job hunt, they're not flawless tools.
But it's pretty obvious sometimes when I'm like, hey, just out of curiosity, like, did you use AI for that cover letter? Like, nothing against that at all, but it looks a little stiff. Like, it looks a little off.
Which is why AI developers are trying to improve the process.
We've built a system that acts as a fail-safe around the typical challenges or typical failure points of a general AI system.
That's Puneet Kohli, CEO and founder of CareerFlow AI, a Silicon Valley startup that built its own AI model customized for a more efficient job search.
We estimate that we save our users at least 10 hours a week.
And AI has saved time for job recruiters, too. The global staffing firm Robert Half has used its proprietary AI model to analyze over 30 million candidate profiles.
AI plays a significant role, I would say, in streamlining tasks like resume screening, candidate matching, and assessing engagement.
Senior Regional Director Jason King says, yes, recruiters can usually tell if AI's been used. And new research shows that job seekers with AI-boosted resumes are 8% more likely to be hired. But according to King, even a strong AI resume can't tell the full story.
Soft skills like communication, adaptability, really aren't easily captured by AI, which is why our recruiters continue to conduct personalized assessments.
Kohli expects we'll continue to see this shift towards incorporating AI in the job hunt.
The resume, in the way we think about it today, is going to become a relic of the past.
And Hockman is hopeful AI might be able to help level the playing field for his students and others.
I do think AI will probably be more fair. I hope I don't come to regret those words.
This Odyssey Conversation, Artificial Revolution, is a production of KCBS All News Radio in San Francisco, produced by Michelle Fredrigal and Dennis Foley. Be sure to download the free Odyssey app for more shows like this, your favorite radio stations, and so much more. For Odyssey and KCBS, I'm Matt Bigler.
Everyone has a community to lean on. A neighborhood, school, kids' teams, where you worship, work, workout, or any other place or group where you choose to belong. Communities can provide support when you need it and even when you don't know you do. Like when it comes to preventing underage drinking and other substance use. You've talked with your kids and shared clear expectations, but you're not with them every minute. Your community members, friends and relatives, teachers and coaches, faith leaders, and other important adults in your kids' lives can be your eyes, ears, and a supportive influence when you're not around, reinforcing your messages with your kids and alerting you to warning signs of underage drinking or other substance use. So talk with your kids about these issues and involve the members of your community to help keep your kids safe, because when you talk, they hear you.
I'm Heather Vail with the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and this is your community events calendar for nonprofit initiatives and charity events around the Valley. The annual Las Vegas Great Santa Run to support Opportunity Village is happening on Saturday, December 7th, with registration and Santa suit pickup at 8 a.m., pre-race festivities at 9 a.m., and the race at 10 a.m. at the Downtown Las Vegas Events Center, 200 South 3rd Street. 5K or 1 mile options are available, and the event is stroller, wheelchair, walker, and pet friendly. Register or find out more at opportunityvillage.org. That's opportunityvillage.org. Signs of Hope's annual Night Out fundraising event with a Hope for the Holidays theme is taking place on Wednesday, December 11th from 5 to 7 p.m. inside the Opium Room at Tao Nightclub in the Venetian Resort, 3377 South Las Vegas Boulevard. This year, the nonprofit is honoring community partners that provide vital support to the organization and its mission of providing help, hope, and healing to those affected by sexual violence. Get your tickets or find out more at sohlv.org. That stands for Signs of Hope Las Vegas, sohlv.org.